Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 21st of May, 2025, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. It's a Wednesday, that means we're going to combine the two shows today. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Murie is in the building, co-hosting in this hour. I got lots to talk about. I got a giveaway today. We've got a giveaway, lots of things in the news to talk about. I want to start the show with the biggest giveaway of all, the Guardian Media Group Cruise Giveaway Promotion. Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel want to take you on a 7-day cruise for four to Panama, Colombia, Curacao, and Aruba on Royal Caribbean's Serenade of the Seas. And here's the best part. No visa required. That's right. No visa required. You have four ways to enter, four ways to win. Fill out the form in the Nassau Guardian. Listen to Star 106.5 and Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. That's three options. Or make a purchase at Going Places Travel. Entry deadline is June 27th, 2025. Drawing on July 4th, 2025. So pack your bags, get ready to soak up the sun and feel that ocean breeze. You and three loved ones sailing the high seas on a vacation cruise of a lifetime. Brought to you by the Guardian Media Group and Going Places Travel. Certain conditions apply, airfare, taxes, and gratuities not included. We got a second giveaway. Giveaway today, we are giving away a pair of tickets for the Tommy Davidson show at Joker's Wild this week. The tickets will be, if you win a pair of tickets, they will be for Wednesday the 21st or Thursday the 22nd. So in the show today, we're going to be giving away a pair of tickets. There's one winner will win a pair of tickets for the Tommy Davidson show at Joker's Wild this week. If we don't give away the tickets today, we're giving away the tickets tomorrow. I was supposed to have Sawyer Boy from Star, sister station, 106.5, on with me this morning as he prepares for his stand-up show, live performance, Y'all Like Foolishness Bay. But I got a note in my WhatsApp inbox this morning from Kalika with a whole bunch of security questions I had to answer before she could let Sawyer Boy come on my show. I don't know why Kalika would have that impression of me. Anyway, we're trying to get Sawyer Boy back on. We're trying to get him on this week, maybe Friday, if I could clear Kalika's security clearance process. I know that's rougher than the airport, man. That's rougher than the airport. We're going to get to the giveaway in the second half of the show. All right. I I want to remind you guys of the Loyalist Charles Farquharson Will Competition, open to junior and high school students across the archipelago. To win, you need to submit two correct answers, the government recording record for Loyalist Charles Farquharson's Will. That's the government recording record for Charles Farquharson's Will, and the recorded date of Charles Farquharson's death. The recorded date of Loyalist Charles Farquharson's death, you're going to call in, and then you'll be transferred to the producer to give the producer your information. Also, I want to say good morning to Mr. Kelly, an avid listener, and thank you for reminding us to remind the general public that local historian Jim Lawler will be presenting at the Historical Society Thursday, the 29th of May. Thursday, the 29th of May. That's next week, Thursday. And Mr. Newry, one of our cousins, one of our HHT cousins, is participating in an art collective, art show being put on by an art collective or collective of artists at Turn on that same evening, Thursday, the 29th of May. Turn Gallery is in the west, outside of the Lyford Key, or just within the Lyford Key community, but not beyond the gates. And the Historical Society sits on the corner, Shirley Street and Elizabeth Avenue, in the northwest quadrant. Both events, I'm sure, are going to be absolutely enlightening. Mr. Newry, the name of, you remember the name of Mr. Lawler's new book? You had a copy of it. You was charming me with it.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, look what I have. And then I pick up my book, Memoirs of Bumpy Watkins, and I was like, look what I have, like cheering with marbles. It would be nice if we could get, like, back to that place, right? Like, the not just the appreciation, like the individual appreciation for books. Because we know Bahamians appreciate books.
Yes. I think Bahamians has moved now to blogs and video. But books are important. People still collect books. That written word is very impressive to touch the book itself. It has like spirit.
Yeah, it's a different experience to touch the book as opposed to reading through digital print. But the book does not become obsolete with the expansion or the advance of bloggers, right? Mm-hmm. And people using the digital platforms to disseminate information. The book becomes the content. Right, like the book provides content for content creators.
When I was younger, my prize collection was three pieces, not a complete piece, but three pieces of the encyclopedia. One of the British, British Britannia type one. So I had A, I had L, and I had like a W that my mom brought home. That's garbage now. You know?
No, but it's not. See, hold on.
Where do you keep it? Where do you store such?
So now that presents an issue, right? How do we preserve written hard copy, paper text? How do we preserve that over the long term, which is a question that everybody across the globe has to answer. But in a hurricane zone, in a place where areas are prone to flooding, right? In a hurricane zone, repairs, roof repairs and things like that are costly and are not necessarily rapid, like time efficient. Right, it could take you a while to repair a roof, right, or to secure a building, and so then it becomes even more urgent for us to figure out how we're going to preserve print. But I think it's important to preserve print for a couple of reasons. First of all, the print won't change. Somebody could change a digital copy.
I understand.
Somebody could alter the history, right? So a book is uploaded, all the print copies are gone. Because we don't know, we can't touch them. We don't know who owns them, where they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're relying only on this digital copy that could be altered. Right? I mean, thank God for blockchain technology that provides a platform or a utility that you can preserve the data, right? The accuracy or veracity of the data. And then at the very least, you'll know who changed it.
Yes.
When and maybe not why, but when and where.
Yeah. One needs space.
Yeah, so those are some cool things happening next week, Thursday. Thank you, Mr. Kelly, for the reminder. Mr. Newry,
yeah.
I just want to put this small note here. I'm not introducing traffic as a topic this morning, but I got to put this small note here. You see large, like commercial vehicles, big box trucks, tow trucks, construct vehicles that tow construction equipment. They all have a plate that's different from our regular plate. Their plate is white with black writing. And the first two, what do you call it? I can't remember the exact word, but the first two symbols on the plate are M and V.
Okay.
Right? And then you get your four numbers. This morning on my way to work, I was cut off by a tow truck speeding out of the main hospital entrance onto Shirley Street, forcing its way out. I mean, literally bullied its way out of the main entrance on Shirley, from the hospital onto Shirley Street. What was interesting about the truck, besides the fact that it was trying to kill people at the place where we save people, is that it didn't have an MV plate on it. It didn't have a white MV plate on it, right? It had a regular blue plate. In fact, the license plate is AT5457. And I thought, okay, that kind of makes sense because you already drive in like a rogue driver. Right, like you're already driving as if you don't drive tow trucks professionally. You're already driving as if you exist outside the law anyway. And I just wanted to bring that to the attention of the authorities. White tow truck possibly working in or looking to pick up business at the hospital with blue plates AT5457. See, for me, as soon as you see the blue plates on a tow truck, that's an opportunity for the police to stop them and figure out what's happening. Right. Yesterday on my way home, I observed countless traffic infractions. And then I came upon a scene where police had pulled over a car, two young men standing outside the car. And when we drive past the car, it's on Bernard Road near L.W. Young. When we drive past the car, there's no plates on the car. Right. No front, no back plates. It's a reasonable reason. But they don't stop every car with no plates on it. I just don't get it. Like, why y'all stop every car with no plates on it? And then you be polite to the people. And if they give you grief, then you tell them, well, listen, I appreciate that you're frustrated. We're all frustrated. But please direct your grief in the form of a letter to Road Traffic Department. Or whoever's responsible for ensuring that you know that your plates are ready. Because they weren't ready when you were supposed to be able to pick them up. Anyway, I just wanted to put that on the record because I think a lot of people are tired of being terrorized by the people who are supposed to be providing service in the country, right? People are tired of being terrorized on the road by rogue taxi drivers, rogue jitney drivers, rogue tour bus drivers, rogue ATV drivers, rogue drivers in red government plates. Right? People are tired of being terrorized by people who are supposed to be serving them. And we're hoping that those who are vying to be the next governing administration understand that the biggest task they have available ahead of them is causing and compelling their colleagues, their peers, those who they supervise, ordinary citizens and guests to the country to govern themselves, to moderate their behavior, to follow the rules. That's the biggest task any of you will have. Aaron, there's always a need to keep a physical copy given our third world power generational issues. That's another thing. We're not even talking about preserving. We're talking about just being able to have access to. Imagine that the power goes down. And then after 8 hours of power banks that's supposed to run out of power. And we have no telecommunication systems, right? How do you access the data you need to do your work if it's in the cloud and you can't connect to the cloud? Thank you, Texter. So, Mr. Nuri, I had a bunch of stories on the list. Lundy hails upcoming improvements in banking on Andrus. DPP prohibits new liquor licenses near schools and churches. But I thought I wanted to start with this one in today's Tribune. 10 years plea deal for rapist stepdad. Man tried to induce abortion after drugging and impregnating girl. The Guardian's headline is 10-year sentence for man who got stepdaughter pregnant. I'm going to read through both articles, right? Because sometimes you get little bits of information from one or the other. A man who repeatedly raped his preteen stepdaughter, resulting in her getting pregnant, was on Tuesday sentenced to 10 years in prison. The 37-year-old man, who will be on probation for 2 years after his release and a breach, would result in a one-year prison sentence. The man, who has been in prison since his arrest in June 2024, pleaded guilty to unlawful sexual intercourse with a dependent and garroting when he appeared before a senior justice. Bisunuri, you could look up that word garroting. G-A-R-R-O-T-I-N-G. You know what that means?
No.
You could look it up?
Yeah, man.
Okay, cool, cool. We get back to the article. Before Senior Justice Cheryl Grant Thompson, the prosecutor, Corrine McVean, told the court that the man began molesting the 12-year-old girl in August 2023. He frightened her into silence by telling her that he would kill her if she told anyone what he did, the court heard. On one occasion, the man gave his stepdaughter a vape to smoke, which made her blackout. When she came to, the child realized that her panties were off. When the man realized that the girl was pregnant, he made her drink castor oil and Guinness, which made her vomit. The man told his stepdaughter that he would take her to a doctor whom he trusted. Before that happened, the girl's mother confronted her daughter about her weight gain and swollen stomach. That's when the child revealed that her stepfather had molested her and had threatened to kill her if she said anything. The matter was subsequently reported to the police. The man admitted to the offenses during a confrontation between himself and the complainant. We're going to stick a pin right there, right? As part of the plea agreement, the man received a concurrent sentence of 8 years for garroting. He will receive credit for the 11 months he spent on remand. Philip Lundy and Moses Bain represented the man. Okay, I want to start here. The man admitted to the offenses during a confrontation between himself and the complainant. Okay, so as far as I'm aware, there is still a practice within this local system that the accuser, the alleged victim in a case of sexual violence will be brought into a room to face the accused. You hear what I just said? That the accuser, the alleged victim, will be brought into a room to face the accused. And here we have in this article, the man admitted to the offenses during a confrontation between himself and the complainant. Is that the process there? Why would the accuser be made to face the accused, not in the court? And then we realize that this teen, if, as the article says, man began molesting girl when she was 12, court was told, and that was in August of 2023. A year will take us to August of 2024, making her 13. And then almost another year, call it half, 13 and 14. And you telling me that you're making 14-year-old accusers, alleged victims, we got to use the legally correct language. You making them confront the accused. Okay. We're going to read from the Tribune article now. 10 years plea deal for rapist stepdad. Oh, Mr. Nuri, you found a...
Still looking.
All right. Man tried to induce abortion after drugging and impregnating girl. A 36-year-old man who raped and impregnated his 12-year-old stepdaughter after drugging her with a vape and then forced her to drink Guinness and castor oil to induce an abortion was sentenced to 10 years behind bars yesterday as part of a plea deal. The man, whose name is being withheld to protect the victim's identity, appeared before Senior Justice Cheryl Grant Thompson to face two counts of unlawful sexual intercourse and one count of garroting. Why is not a count of rape? Police say the abuse occurred between August 1st And September 30th, 2023, we turn to page 5. It began one evening while the girl watched television with her younger siblings. The stepfather reportedly sent the younger children out of the room, then placed his hands under her dress. This is going to get rough here. And penetrated her with his fingers. The second assault happened a few days later while she was holding her baby brother in bed. The man took the child from her, laid him in the middle of the bed, and raped her. She said he pinned her down, ignored her cries and kicks, and removed her clothing and raped her without a condom, covering her mouth to silence her. The assault lasted roughly 20 minutes. 2 days afterwards, he gave her a colorful vape to smoke. She recalled taking two puffs and falling asleep. After waking up, the minor noticed that her panties were off. In January, when he noticed that her stomach was getting big, he gave her castor oil and Guinness to drink, which made her vomit. He also told her he would pay for her to go to the doctor, but he said he needed to find one he trusted. Child's mother learned about the abuse when her daughter revealed that her stepfather had been sexually abusing her, ultimately leading to his arrest. The girl said she was afraid to tell anyone sooner because he threatened to kill her if she did. A doctor also conducted a physical check and confirmed that her hymen was not intact and that she was pregnant. After his arrest, police said the child confronted her abuser and confirmed he had sexually abused her multiple times. The child said he would give her a vape, causing her to black out, and she would wake up with her underwear missing. The man admitted to the crime and apologized in court yesterday, claiming he is trying to improve himself daily. Quote, I'm sorry to my wife, to my family, and to my kids, and I hope someday I would be forgiven, close quotes, he said. Tell me that's not the beginning of the quotation. Like you, tell me you started midway through the quotation. Man said, quote, I'm sorry to my wife, to my family, and to my kids, and I hope someday I would be forgiven. By whom? By whom? He said. Anyway, his wife, the child's mother, sat silently, tears streaming down her face during his apology. Justice Grant Thompson said she was unsure if his wife would forgive him immediately, but acknowledged that it was a matter between her and God. Oh, boy. She reprimanded the man for his actions, emphasizing that although the child was not his biological daughter, he stood in the role of a father and should have never abused that trust. She acknowledged his early guilty plea, but noted that the facts and circumstances of the case remain deeply troubling. Quote, the society at large is not happy with these types of offenses, close quote, she said. Quote, they are aware that yours is a heavy responsibility and the position of every father and mother to protect the children of the nation, and certainly their innocence should not be abused, close quotes. Taking the plea agreement into consideration, the judge sentenced him to 10 years in prison for 2 counts of unlawful sexual intercourse with a dependent child. He was also sentenced to 8 years for the offense of garroting to run concurrently.
How do you spell your garroting? G-A-R.
G-A-R-R-O-T-I-N-G.
I have that as like strangulation type thing, man. But that can't be it. Hold on, let me show you.
Yeah, no, that's what I figured it was. We're going to read it here. Garroting is a form of strangulation, usually with a handheld ligature like a rope, wire, or even the attacker's arm to cause death or incapacitate a victim. The term originated from the garrote, an execution device used in Spain and its former colonies.
That can't be it, though.
Well, I mean, because we have no reference to an act like that, right? Garroting, I'm searching now, garroting in Bahamian law. Says Penal Code Chapter 84.1. In Bahamian law, garroting, while not explicitly named as a specific crime in the Penal Code, this is an AI overview, by the way. Right? AI is telling me this. It's using Wikipedia and another source. In Bahamian law, garroting, while not explicitly named as a specific crime in the Penal Code, is considered a form of torture and is prohibited under the Constitution. The Bahamas' Constitution explicitly forbids torture and ill treatment, providing victims the right to seek redress. Additionally, the Evidence Act prevents the use of confessions or evidence obtained through torture or ill treatment. While Bahamian law doesn't currently criminalize acts of torture in general, the Penal Code does address torture committed by prison officers and cruelty, according to a blog from the Convention Against Torture. So there's two sources. It's this blog from the Convention Against Torture and Wikipedia. It's very, very interesting. I'm interested why garroting and why unlawful sexual intercourse as opposed to rape. Now, I want to juxtapose that story, Mr. Nuri. I mean, there's more to talk about if you want to go back into the story. But I want to juxtapose that story to this story, case dropped against murder suspect who refused plea deal, Our News, 12th of May, 2025. Oh, come on. You forgive me, I come in right now. Listeners, here we go. From that article, prosecutors dropped a murder case against a man after he declined to take a plea deal. Ricardo Stubbs was charged with the January 23rd, 2020 murder of Jaquiel Ambrister, rejected the proposed plea deal last October. Prosecutors brought the matter to an end last week by presenting a nolle prosequi. They had alleged that Stubbs was one of two gunmen who burst into Ambrister's home and shot him. The interesting case involving a plea deal, right? And for people who are questioning the plea deal given to this stepfather, I think we should demand public discussion from the policymakers and the lawmakers on the intent of the plea deal, the strategies that you are employing to achieve those intended goals, questions on whether the benefit to the state or the judicial mechanisms also, that this also translates to a benefit for the citizens. Are we doing post-case interviews? Are we asking victims and victims' families if they're actually satisfied with what came out of the plea deal? And then, like I said, the intention of the plea deal and why are plea deals being invoked? Are you invoking plea deals because you have no evidence? Are you invoking plea deals because on the police side, you're having difficulty building strong cases? Right? Like, all of this information is necessary so we know where to direct the resources for resolving the issues. Producer, let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Good. Boy, you know, sometimes me and you do agree sometimes, but I agree with you this morning on this one. I can be open with you. I agree this morning.
Yes, sir.
I ain't taking no plea deal if I know I'm innocent.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't taking a plea deal if I guilty. If I believe I'm guilty, I'll take a plea deal. But if I'm innocent, I ain't taking a plea deal. I'm fighting my case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see the deal here with the gentleman who didn't take the plea deal and still win the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That man was innocent. You only take plea deal when you're guilty. You know, why should I have to take a plea deal if I am innocent? Some people say they only want to get over the case quick. But that case could dry. Tell the big man come from heaven. I fight in my case if I'm innocent.
But and I think that's one of the considerations, right? Like, it's a relatively petty matter. Something that a sentence, like maximum sentence, would result in, say, 4 years. This is possibly a first of, it's being assessed as a first offense. And I know that this case that has a maximum penalty of 4 years, I could sit in jail for 8 years before it's heard.
But that's all right. The government will, I'll then turn around and sue the government, because if I come out innocent and they put me in court, so that means they have me in court, like how they say they lost some of the illegals in court. That means I'm in court where they know I shouldn't be in court.
I mean, okay.
I'm in jail.
You could
I shouldn't be in jail.
You could imagine, right, that you've been detained as a migrant for illegal entry or overstaying, and you say you choose to serve a sentence. You choose to serve the sentence, right? Or you say, okay, I, whatever, you catch me, I go through the process. You could imagine